Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. When you listen to WFHB, sometimes you can't predict what you're going to hear next. Isn't that wonderful? Our volunteer DJs play music you won't find anywhere else on the radio. Our award-winning news and public affairs programs aren't heard on other stations, and we celebrate the delightful diversity and vibrant culture of South Central Indiana. But when you listen, remember that we need you. We always need donations from listeners to keep on going and growing. If you click the donate button on our website, wfhb.org, you'll find out how easy it is to become a sustaining member. If you can give us a small donation every month, automatically and securely, you'll help WFHB in the best way possible. And then when you hear our fun drive appeals, you'll feel really good. Thanks.
Are you tuning up, Bill?
I'm tuning up.
Would that be a C?
That's a D.
A D. A D.
And here's a P.
It sounds a little like a D.
PD.
Now you should see yourself, right?
Well, I see myself now. I see all of you.
Well, that's unfortunate.
That's bad. That's bad news, boys. Bad news.
Yeah, okay. I'm picking my nose down.
Yeah, you are. Get your finger out of your nose.
And everything looks good, so let's go.
Well, good morning, everybody. By golly, good to be here again this morning. And it's been a wonderful week, a little dry, but golly, this is Inside Outdoors with Buddy Bill.
And I'm Don Jordan.
And I'm Rich Reardon.
All three of us is here. We're all gathered together this morning here at home. Home, sweet home. I love the home side.
Well, are you okay, Bill?
Get me another drink. I'll be better.
What are you drinking today?
I can't tell you.
You can't tell me.
It's a secret.
He's got that snow snake medicine out, I think.
That snow snake medicine, I'll tell you what now. When you see a snow snake, you better have some of that medicine.
Well, I know I've been hearing about some homemade snow snake medicine around here.
Ain't nothing wrong with that either.
Well, is that what your snow snake medicine is?
Well, that could be.
Yeah?
It could be.
He doesn't like to reveal his secrets.
I can't tell everything.
I don't blame him.
No. What's new this week? I did talk to who? I can't even remember who I talked to. A neighbor down here, I guess it was, said there was an injury down on the lake about 3 weeks ago.
Really?
She couldn't remember the name of the fellow. He was fishing down there with his buddy, and one of them fast boats went by about 90 miles an hour or whatever they do. I don't know how many knots they go, but it caused an awful wake and knocked him out of the boat.
Oh.
The only thing that saved him was when he went over backwards, he caught his foot in the railing and kept him from going down. So the guy was able to get him pulled back up, but it broke his back, and he's in rehab now.
Oh, in a nursing
home. She couldn't remember his name.
Was he alone?
No, he was with a buddy.
Oh, okay. So that's how they saved him.
That's how he saved him. He pulled him. He went over backwards and caught his foot in the railing, and because that's when it broke his back, and he pulled him back up and got him to the hospital. But
man, you got to watch it when you're in a small boat with those big, giant boats come by.
I don't know how kind of big a boat he had. Of course, this lake's been so busy. This has been a busy spring for Lake Monroe.
Well, I've said it before. I was in a pontoon boat that, you know, almost, it didn't tip over. It's hard to tip one of those over, but it certainly, I think it was up about a 45-degree angle at one spot when one of those big cigar boats flew by.
Yeah, that's what happened to this guy, and I don't know how big a boat they had or anything. She didn't say, and probably didn't know, but... that's the way it was, and that was one. I'm sure there've been others down there, other accidents, but I haven't heard anything. And they were catching some nice crappie. A neighbor said he caught some nice crappie down there this past week, and caught. He did. He said he went catfishing, but he didn't do any good catfishing. But he did catch some real nice crappie.
Well, that's good.
So the fishing down on Lake Monroe is good, and the people is crowded, and so just take your time, be patient, and work yourself in, work yourself back out, and go home, and go home safe.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful idea. Yeah. Rex Waters, you know, he retired last Friday was his last day.
Yes.
We had an article yesterday.
They had an article about him in the local, whatchamacallit.
And I'll tell you what, they're going to miss him.
Yes, I'd say they are.
They're going to miss him considerably, and they can find somebody to take that position, but they won't be able to fill it for a while.
Well, if you go to our website, which is insideoutdoorsradio.com, I have posted, and it'll be right in the menu there, Rex Waters on the History of Lake Monroe. Did anybody see that?
No.
Yeah, he did a YouTube thing. I guess it was at the Bloomington Historical Center. He gives a program on Lake Monroe and the history of it, and it's about an hour long. It's real interesting to see.
Well, we'll have to check that out.
I'd say it would be. Of course, he's been down there, 43 years or 45? So he's been down there a long time.
He's seen it all.
He's seen a lot of ups and downs, and a lot of bad times and a lot of good times.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting talk. If anybody wants to know about the history, he's the guy to talk to, and he does a great job on this talk. So it's right there on our website.
Of course, he wasn't here when I don't know what year he come. I don't remember him down there when the lake was first built. He come down later.
No, I believe you're right about that.
Maury Reeves was the lake manager. And I don't know where he come after Maury come or before Maury left.
Well, if he's been there for 43 years, you said, that would put him there here in the 70s, sometime in the 70s.
Okay, it would have been after Maury probably left. But Maury was one heck of a lake manager. Boy, he worked himself silly down here. He done a lot of work.
Was he the first lake manager?
Yes. Yes, he was. And he was a dandy. He was a good man. And then they transferred him to Patoka, and then he retired and passed away. And as far as I know, he's passed away. I'm sure he has. But,
Well, speaking of Patoka, we got some guy caught a huge catfish down at Patoka this past week.
How huge?
I didn't say.
It looked like a boat.
It looked like it could be 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say huge would be 50 pounds, maybe a little longer.
A flathead, a big flathead. Mm. And I always knew that there were, a lot of, not a lot, but number of people catch big catfish out of Lake Monroe, but I didn't realize Patoka was coming in that direction now, too.
I didn't either. That's the biggest one I think I've heard of.
Well, it's definitely a nice fish and worth looking at. Worth looking at. Now, a lot of guys say they prefer to use that stink bait for catfish.
Ooh, smelly stuff.
The smelly stuff, yeah, that you can buy, right? But
BJ makes one.
I've always found that, if you catch a couple of bluegills and fillet them out and keep those rib cage bones, that little piece of meat on there, throw that out there on your catfish hook, you're likely to catch a catfish.
That is a good way.
Yeah.
That sounds like it'd stay on the hook pretty well.
It stays on the hook well. They like them.
Yeah.
And they don't have to stink.
Right.
Now, I've heard some other concoctions where people used chicken scat and all kinds of things like that and put it in a jar and let it set for a month or something and then soak a sponge in that nasty stuff and put that sponge on your hook. You ever heard of that, Bill?
No.
I have heard rumors of that, but I wouldn't try it myself, but some people do anything.
Well, that was some guy from Oklahoma who told me about that. His name was Ray Coyle. Do you remember him? He used to live here in Bloomington, and he's long gone now, but he's the guy that told me about that, and he was usually pretty good on his advice. I just never heard of anything like that before.
Well, I used to always just get a thing of chicken livers, and that seemed to be pretty good.
Chicken liver work?
Yep.
Absolutely.
There's good. But you can get these little catfish sacks on your...
Is that your phone, Bill?
I believe it is.
Well, is it the president?
Could be.
Well, hit him on.
He's supposed to call me this afternoon.
I knew you were in touch with him, but I didn't realize that you were on his fast dial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he just pushes a button and gets me. He wants advice, but he don't take it very well.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. Heard that. Well, while you're talking to the president, you know what? There hasn't been a darn thing worth of news going around except some boating accidents. And you opened up the show with one there. So we got boating accidents, ORV accidents. We got pretty good fishing. The creeks are looking real good. The White River looks real good. If you're a stream fisherman, buddy, this is the time. This is the time. The water levels are just about perfect, and it's cleared up. You can actually see into the water a little on White River there at Martinsville.
Boy, that'd be a change.
Yeah, it's looking blue-green, actually, so... Don't see the White River that way too much.
No, you don't.
If you're a float trip person, this would be a real good time to do the White River.
Yeah.
Real good time. You'd probably catch some fish. When I used to do this, I used to float the White River now and then. I would start up north of Ramona. You know where Ramona is?
I know about where it's at.
It's up there north of Gosport, up in that direction. Mm-hmm. And there's some rocky stretches down through there where you can catch smallmouth bass. And where you're not catching smallmouth bass, there are largemouth bass. This kind of weather, boy, pretty nice. If I was a bass fisherman, I think I'd be out there hitting it.
Yeah.
That's my tip for the day.
I don't know if you disagreed with my comment on the landowner thing for hunting on your land.
Oh, I saw something about, I posted that.
Yeah, I replied to it, but I was outspoken about it. Let me say that.
Okay. The pheasant picture.
Yeah.
Yes, I know your point, and yes, I agree with you about that in many respects. However, maybe I'm just being fooled by this picture here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why they put pheasant on there,
mm-hmm,
is that there is very little pheasant habitat available for public hunting in Indiana.
Right.
It's all in private hands. And it's a tradition here. It has been, because there are no public lands for pheasant hunting, to pay people to hunt, private guys paying them to hunt pheasant on their land. And this is along those same lines. And I don't like it either, but for some people, I guess, that want to hunt pheasant really bad, this is the only solution, unless you go to one of the put and take where they turn loose the caged pheasants that just run. They don't fly.
Right.
And they're all right there where they turn them loose. And That's pretty easy shooting there. So that's basically your two options if you don't own land up there.
Yeah.
In northern Indiana. And that's just a little addendum to your comment.
Yeah, I just think that if you have, it's right now, a lot of those, if they're private, they're at least, you can hunt on your own land, of course, but it just makes me wonder whether it's too much they have a hard enough time with their habitat to begin with. I guess it wouldn't be that widespread, but I wonder what they would pay, whether it actually pays the person who's got the land, whether they're actually going to, what kind of money they would make, and then, how you would handle that. I mean, does the DNR call you up and say so-and-so paid, so they've got a pass or something, or do they have to contact you? I don't understand how the whole thing would work either.
They didn't really explain it, did they?
No.
So, my question was, if I do this, do I have to let everybody that the DNR sends here come onto my land and hunt? Or is it just going to be open to anybody who wants to hunt?
I think it might be something like that, because it says receive financial incentives for allowing game bird hunting on your property. So maybe you just go, okay, I'm open, and then you put a sign up or something, and then people just know it. But I don't know whether it's specifically per hunter or per, your property itself, which would probably make more sense. It'd be easier to manage that way, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's a good idea. And that pay to play stuff, we already have canned hunting, it is actually legalized, when the DNR supported it.
Yeah.
And it was the DNR guy who let them in the door in the first place.
Right.
And, I'm just surprised that we don't have canned hunting for lions and tigers and elephants.
Right.
Seriously. Yeah, there was I just saw a thing the other day where there are 12,000 lions waiting to be shot on canned hunts. These are lions that are, old and disabled and cannot perform anymore, got rid of by circuses, by zoos, by people who owned them and treated them terribly. Now they're out there laying in the sun waiting for some guy to drive up in a ORV with a guide and set across the field with his telescope and shoot this lion. For how much? I don't know. What do they thought? What do you call it? $10,000, $20,000.
I would imagine it'd be a lot.
I hope he don't get mine that's behind the house here.
Well, boy, you better not say that. They might be out there.
Oh man, I'll tell my little lion buddy to he better hide.
Yeah, well, it's if you're a lion and you're in a inside a fenced compound, your days are numbered.
Yeah, that's true.
Your days are numbered. Well, so.
Okay. Well, I had to take that phone. I don't know where Clarice went. And the day is my birthday, and that was a birthday wishes, and I had to talk to her.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Bill.
And jeez, that was happy birthday. We didn't know.
That was June Stanger, and her birthday is today, too.
Oh, wow.
So she wished me a happy birthday, and I wished her a happy birthday.
Well, happy birthday again.
Thank you.
How's it feel to be 50 now? You're 50, right?
28.
Are you 28? I thought you were a little older than that.
No. See, that's the problem with you people. You try to get me as old as you are.
Well, we can see your picture, Bill.
You see the picture on the wall?
I'm sitting here looking at you.
Well. Okay.
A good try, though.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Real good try.
Well, I seen your picture on the wall the other day, and you look so beautiful.
You better get out your harp there, Don.
Yeah, where's your harp at, man? I got to have a little music. I can't sing without music.
I may have retired it into the desk. When we take a break, I'll hunt it up.
Yeah, well, we do that.
I will.
Yeah. What else? The neighbors, there ain't nothing much going on down here.
Well, we were talking about this article about the DNR's paying landowners or giving them financial incentives, whatever that means, for allowing game bird hunting on their property.
What game bird?
Well, apparently
ain't no pheasants, ain't no
bobwhite, quail, pheasant, and woodcock, and or turkey hunting.
Well, there might be a few turkeys around. There's a lot of them, I guess.
Well, the picture they show in the news release they posted is of a guess what pheasant, and. They are in big demand, as you know, by hunters. And the only place you're going to find them is up in northern Indiana in this state, except, as I said previously, the put and take, the caged birds that they turn loose for you to shoot.
Yeah, this soil down here, they won't live down here.
Yes, that's right.
You know why?
I don't know what the exact ingredient in the soil is, but I've always known that it was the soil. What is it?
Well, one thing, I don't know, there may be more than one thing, but one thing is the soil down here, when the bird lights and walks in the dirt and mud, it don't come off their claws. It hangs and sticks onto their claws and keeps building up till they can't really fly.
I never heard that before.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been told. And up north, the soil is a different type of soil altogether, and it doesn't accumulate on the claws.
I always thought it was some kind of a dietary ingredient that was in the soils.
That's why I say there may be more than one thing, and I have heard that too.
By the way, you know who would know the answer to that would be Steve Bax. Did you see that? You know Steve Bax, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Steve, who has now been at the DNR for over 40 years, was just got a big honor here. This is an attaboy, Steve. Congratulations to Steve Bax, wildlife research biologist. Let me get the whole story here for you.
Let's hear it.
I guess I'm not going to get it that they seem to have removed it. But anyway, the little bit that's here, I can tell you about. He has received the 2020 Chase S. Osborne Award in conservation from Purdue Forestry and Natural Resources. I'm not sure what that is. The award is given to an individual who has made significant contributions to wildlife conservation in Indiana through writing, research, teaching, or other personal accomplishments. Steve started at the DNR in 1974 as a seasonal biologist aide during undergraduate years. He returned to the DNR in 79 as the quail project leader, and in 81 he assumed his present wildlife research position. That's in Mitchell still, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
As the ruffed grouse and turkey project lead. In addition to his work with DNR, Steve has acted as a manuscript and publication reviewer for a variety of national organizations, and has been an author or co-author of more than 40 technical publications. He serves on numerous committees and study groups, and join us in congratulating Steve. So congratulations, Steve.
Yeah. You know, Steve is the one that sells all them there nightcrawler eggs.
Yes, well.
Yeah. He kind of, that's probably part of his reward.
Maybe coming, he wrote up some papers about it.
Yeah, he probably has. Yeah. That's the guy. He come up with them nightcrawler eggs, and he pushes them pretty hard. So I'd say he's wrote a lot of stories on them.
Well, he must be getting ready to retire. 74. He's been around there for quite some time. And, he must be about the same age as Rex Waters.
I'd say probably is.
So, I'm looking now at, Purdue, Forestry. It's called Purdue Forestry and Natural Resources. Somehow connected with Purdue, but it isn't really clear about whether it is or not. So, but I'd say that it is. And I bet Steve went to Purdue University, don't you?
I would imagine, but I have no idea.
Right. I would.
I really wouldn't know. Rex Waters, I think, went to Purdue.
Well, you know, he's,
of course he was from Fort Wayne, so he wasn't far away.
Yeah, I don't know where Steve was from originally. They don't tell you much about it on that little clip they posted on Facebook, by the way. You can probably find that if you looked at the DNR's page on Facebook. So there you have it. That's about the hottest news I got for today.
Well, I got something from Purdue.
Uh-oh.
Yep, since we mentioned it. And it's about the, we talked about this last week. We didn't have an answer, so I looked it up. And that was about the periodic cicadas.
Yes.
And when they're coming back. And,
yes.
And that is next year.
Yeah, I looked that up too.
Yep.
You're absolutely correct.
The last one was in 2004, and it's the 17-year one, so it's 2021. I expect them in... heaviest in South Central Indiana, which is smack dab in our backyards.
Yes, they don't have them up in Northern Indiana hardly at all, these 17-year locusts.
Yeah, I had heard that there were some in West Virginia and Virginia this year, but and I don't know, I haven't really researched that, like why they show up separately in different places, but for us, last was 2004, which makes sense. We were saying That was when Bill got sick after he fried too many of them and ended up in the hospital.
Bill got fried on fried locusts.
Yeah, he was eating them up.
Deep fried.
Right and left.
Deep fried. Yeah. Deep fried.
It was the best.
Now, did they have breading on them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to put breading on them, yeah.
Now, do you just eat their rear end or do you eat the whole critter?
Well, you have to eat the whole critter because it's all crunchy. Oh, it's just, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, how sick did you get?
Well, I'm not too sick. I just eat too many of them. I mean, got a belly ache and it's my own fault. I shouldn't eat so many. But they were so good. But you take a little flour and a little buttermilk and put in a little seasonings or whatever you prefer, garlic powder, lemon powder, stuff like that, and mix that all up and then dip them in there good. Make sure they're good and coated, and then drop them in that hot eye grease there in the old deep fryer. Ooh, ooh.
Yeah.
You talk about good.
Just don't eat too many, because that was
just don't eat too many. Yeah. That's right.
Hello there, folks. Welcome to the Outdoors Today Lake Report. Fishing's been real good down there. A lot of nice crappie bluegill being caught. The water's up right now, and the storm we had has brought the lake up to about 4 feet. So I got a good stall on that one. Greg, you got any more of them fried cicadas? Man, them was good. The water temperature's running in the 70s, so that way. Oh, man. Well, that's about it from Bay Bills. Everybody, I hope you have a real good week and have a happy day. Greg, you got any more of them fried cicadas?
Mr. Buddy Bill, the doctor will see you in a few minutes. Can you tell me what the problem is?
Oh, my. I got quite a tummy ache. Oh.
Have you been eating anything out of the ordinary?
Well, no, not really.
Honey, you tell her the truth.
Oh, but it can't be that. Oh.
He's been eating those cicadas for a good month now. Fortunately, they pretty much disappeared.
Oh, my stomach. Honey, you better do the fishing report.
Well, the lake level is normal.
Oh, my stomach. Oh.
And the temperature's 72 degrees.
Oh, my stomach. Oh.
And the fish are biting like usual. Blah, blah, blah. Right, honey?
Oh. Nurse, will I be able to play the violin with this swelling neck of mine?
Oh, yes, Buddy Bill. You'll be back to normal real soon.
Well, that's funny. I never played the violin before. Oh. Oh. Oh, my stomach. Oh. 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 Oh, my stomach. Oh. Oh.
He went over,
I remember seeing pictures of birds puking up cicadas after having eaten too many.
Yeah, but they eat them raw, and that's not good.
I see.
They eat them raw. Mm-hmm.
So when you are the soft parts on the back end of them, is that crispy also?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. The whole thing is good and crispy. You put them in deep fryer, yeah. When you bread them right and put them in that deep fryer, and it don't take but 3 or 4 minutes. If your grease is hot, depending on your grease and stuff, and you drop them in there, and boy, it won't take but about 3 or 4 minutes. They'll start floating, and when they start floating, take them out and let them cool.
Well, so did you cook these at your place over there?
At my place, yeah.
It was so famous, he went all the way to Japan. Mr. Sakai, that cooking show where they go up against each other. You know what I mean? They don't have that anymore. That was in 2004.
Yeah, they quit having it after that.
But he got invited to Japan and went over there and had a cook-off. Japanese.
I did not know that. Did you really, Bill?
Yes.
Well, arigato.
And won. He won.
And I come in first place, too.
No kidding. Well,
yes.
When was that?
In, what was it, 2004?
2004, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Did you have to take your cicadas with you?
They shipped them over there.
Yeah.
They shipped them over. Uh-huh. That's a pretty big deal, Bill.
So we'd have our own variety.
Our own cicadas?
They shipped them over there, and then...
Well, they were only here, and they wanted to try it. So they had to have... Bill shipped them so many so that he could... They could cook their own version of it, which didn't turn out as good.
Hello? Oh, konnichiwa, Mr. Sky. Iron Chef wants to challenge me to a food fight in Kitchen Stadium. Oh, he wants me to cook. He's heard about my cooking skills. Hey, can I bring my iron skillet? Tea fall? No, I expect it'll be a standing up kind of deal. Domo, ayagato, sayamasta, Mr. Sky. See you later.
Challenger, Chef Buddy Bill does not have any...
Ah, correction. He says it's just regular order, biscuits and gravy. I think he's choosing sausage.
Interesting move there.
A squeeze on?
Yes.
The Iron Chef is taking his biscuits and adding lobster, mixed onions, and extra Chinese sauce.
15 minutes left to go.
That's what he's using to stuff his biscuits.
All right, I'm going to take a guess here. Maybe his gravy will be Japanese.
I think you're right.
He's definitely not turning into a Hoosier here, huh?
Squeeze on.
Yes?
I asked the challenger why he's using fried cicadas in his dishes.
10 minutes left to go.
And he said the vegetable he was provided with just didn't seem to have enough crunch to it.
Ah, interesting move there. I can see where he's coming from.
Squeeze on.
Yes? Go ahead, Ota.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. A creamy white sauce the challenger Buddy Bill has added to the dish.
5 minutes left to go.
Is his special beer-based boiled carrots and squirrel meat red sauce that he feeds his dog Bruno. Oh,
I guess that's why he's barking out his orders.
Ooh, man. Boy, I've done a good job on them. Man, I tell you what, I know how to do that.
1 minute.
For instance, if I were in Naobo and had a top biscuit and gravy flophouse, and this was served, I wouldn't be surprised at all. This is very high class. Normally, you drench the biscuits and gravy, but the cicadas, he knows just where to stop to control the flavor. Buddy Bill, I am completely satisfied. I have never tasted biscuits and cicada gravy before. He has taught me a lesson. This is quite good.
Now that is good.
When I first put it in my mouth, I thought it was so ordinary. But as I kept eating more, I started to realize it is so delicato. And the cicadas are perfect as well. It doesn't have any trace of a fishy smell. Mmm, very good though. Sausage and gravy on a biscuit though go so well together. I just can't stop eating this. I must apologize. Honestly, before the battle, I wasn't expecting much from him. This is good though.
I'm gonna finish the rest of these cicadas.
The verdict is moments away. Which side of the Pacific will be celebrating?
Ah, Buddy Bill, you have beat the Iron Chef. How did you make this cicada biscuits and gravy?
Well, it's not really hard, but you got to really be careful of how many cicadas you put in, because if you do, you'll overdose it, and it's not near as good. The gravy is kind of easy to make, but you got there again, you kind of got to watch and don't overcook it.
And so, Jubilant, Buddy Bill, how did you come up with the concept?
Well, you know, we got to eating them and deep frying them and eating them, and gosh, they were good. And I thought, my, if I just put these in gravy, I bet you that gravy would taste wonderful. And sure enough, it did.
Well, Buddy Bill, you have beat the Iron Chef. Where do you go next?
I'm going back to the States and then over to Africa for a little while. Domo, arigato, sayamasta, Mr. Sky. Whatever that was, bless you.
I see, like a tempura.
So I doubt if they have it this year, but they might. I mean, I don't know that they won't, but they probably.
We'll see.
They may have it. I don't know.
Well, we'll all have to check them out next year have a little discussion about it. When maybe we can get one of those biologists to come in again, and we'll feed him some of that too. He seemed, that one guy seemed to like it. That's where this whole thing started.
Yeah, he seemed to really like them.
So did you bring him into the radio station for him to eat?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah.
Are you going to do that this year?
We took a batch in there.
Yep.
I don't know what we'll do this year. It's hard to tell what we'll end up doing.
Well, it's next year, so we still got a year to
next year. Next year, yeah. Next year.
Well, I certainly hope that we can do a repeat on that. I'd want to taste one of these critters.
Oh, well, we can take care of that.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Is that a wood stove behind you?
It is.
I thought it was.
Yes, it's a homestead, I believe. Is
a homestead?
That's a nice one. I've seen that up close. It's nice.
Yeah, that's a nice.
I like the wood stove. You can't beat it. My cat used to love to sit in front of that stove. And sometimes she'd just sit there for hours and just stare at it, you know, and soak in that warm coming through that glass.
I can do that, too. I like watching a fire when I'm cold.
Where's the cat?
Cat has passed on.
Passed on. I was afraid of that.
Yes, she died a few months ago after being my buddy for 17 years. Picked her up at the animal shelter in Inverness, Florida.
Inverness, Florida.
Right, in 2002. Been with me ever since until she passed on. Anyway, she's gone. Mm. And you know how it is. You miss them.
Oh, yeah, they're just one of the family.
Sure.
Yep, that's right.
But yeah, they become one of the family, and it's hard to give them up, I'll tell you.
You have a cat, don't you?
Oh, no? Yes.
Yeah. What's your cat's name?
Well, he's got a lot of names. Sometimes he's got we've had several cats. We had one that was called Pris. Boy, she was a dandy.
Pris?
I remember Pris. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then we had the black and white Boots.
Yeah.
Black and white Boots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good name for him. I bet she had white boots or black boots?
White.
White boots.
White boots, yeah.
And Rich, you have a pet?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Named after Buddy Bill.
He's Buddy Bill.
Buddy Bill the dog.
There you go.
You might get him barking if you don't watch it. He's laying down here by my feet.
Is he?
Yeah.
Hey, buddy. Arf, 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 arf. Probably best to leave a sleeping dog sleep.
Well, that's what they say.
You know, we touched on these rare species and things a while ago when we talked about the game birds in Indiana. And if you go down the list, you know, game birds in Indiana, let's see, ruffed grouse. Well, we don't have those anymore, although they claim we do. Bobwhite quail. People claim we have those in the wild still, but boy, I haven't heard one for quite some time.
I was going to say, try to find one.
Yeah. I haven't. I've heard guys say, well, I heard one someplace. But
well, I told you we heard one here. I only heard it for 1 or 2 days, and then it disappeared, but that was earlier this spring.
Well, it probably was killed by a cat.
Yeah.
Which just happens a lot. But in any case, there are no bobwhite that I know of, at least wild bobwhite. And woodcock are scarce as hen's teeth.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen a woodcock in Indiana for 40 years.
I've never seen
I ain't seen any hen's teeth either for 40 years.
I bet you haven't. And then we got pheasant. Well, they only have pheasant up in certain places in northern Indiana. And because of the removal of all of the fence rows and woodlots and the corporate farms that have pretty much scraped the landscape bare to get every last grain of corn they can, there's very little habitat left for pheasants. So of those, the one that's left is the turkey. Well, we do have lots of turkeys.
We do have turkeys.
Lots of turkeys.
And that's the only one of the bunch, and I don't see the DNR offering anybody money to let them hunt turkey on your land.
No.
I don't know who they're offering this money to on the hunting, but it is true that Indiana is in miserable shape when it comes to game birds. And actually, probably every other bird is probably suffering in Indiana now, too. my guess, just because of the cutting of all the trees that's taken place in the last 5 to 10 years. Massive tree cutting, massive. There seems to be a woodlot everywhere you look. You drive around in southern Indiana, you're going to find a woodlot with lots of dead trees laying there. And, you know, Hoosier National, we just don't know what's happening over there. We haven't heard from anybody. There hasn't been anything Abu said about what's going on with that lawsuit where the county was had hired some lawyers to try to stop them from cutting that 4,000 acres of trees over there on the upper end of Lake Monroe. Have you guys heard anything about that?
Ain't heard a word.
So I don't think that lawsuit's happened yet.
Okay, well, I'll have to call my, Cheryl Munson. She should have some news on that.
Yeah.
I wish I could call her right now. I would.
If somebody has Zoom, they could certainly join us. We'd be glad to have them. So.
Well, I invited her to come on after we got back in the studio because, you know, it'd be maybe a little difficult right now, but I suppose she could join us in Zoom.
Yeah, if someone knows how to do it, and we'll just say that right now. If you'd like to be on Zoom and have a talk with us, you're certainly welcome. All you got to do is contact us.
For the Facebook site, it's Don Jordan's Inside Outdoors.
And it'd be easy enough to just send a PM message through Facebook, probably. Most people have Facebook.
Probably would be. And yes, that's Inside Outdoors, yep. Period.
It's easy to find if you're on Facebook.
I got maybe an interesting story here. Did you know, or actually, Smithsonian Magazine is asking this question. Why does every tourist attraction sell fudge?
Uh-huh.
One thing that is, that places like Niagara Falls, Disneyland, Ellis Island have in common is fudge. Okay.
Yep.
Now it's curious that there is no fudge shop in Bloomington. I don't know if there's a fudge shop in Nashville. There was in both places at one time.
Well, there was a fudge shop. Bill, what's the name of that gas station right there by South Walnut?
Oh, yeah, down at Sitco there.
Yeah, across the street, there's a little tiny little strip mall kind of thing.
Oh, it had a
building, and there was a woman that had fudge in there at one time. I don't know if she still does, but
I don't think they're in there anymore.
Yeah, it might not
be. I don't
be.
Think so either.
But anyway, there that was the only one I ever saw.
Yeah, I don't think they're in there anymore.
No,
there used to be one there around the Indiana Theater, wasn't it? At one time.
I think I remember something like that. Yeah.
There was a shop there. They sold sweets, but I can't remember. It's kind of fuzzy.
Candy apples.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I did reply to that post you made about every tourist attraction sell fudge. I said, because you're tired, dirty, and seen the most amazing things and feel you deserve a treat, or you have whiny kids, or a combination of both.
Ah, well, if you give them fudge, though, you got kids going wacko.
True.
Sugar eyes. Hey, you want to see a kid running around screaming? Give him fudge.
But, you know, if you've been out there walking around Yellowstone all day and then you see something like that, you don't feel as guilty as compared to if you're at home because you feel like you're spending a lot of energy is basically what I meant.
Okay. Here's a nice little ditty about this subject. The first known recipe for fudge, did you read this, is in a letter written by a Vassar College freshman named Emmeline Battersby Hartridge. From that point on, the all-female student body started a tradition swapping fudge recipes, singing songs about it, and making it in bulk to raise money for the school. So this was in 1898. So fudge has been around for a while.
Wow, yeah.
I guess there was a big swell of fudge shops after the Civil War. a lot of fudge shops opened up around the country. So there you go. It has a fairly long history going back before Hershey, that's for sure. Back when chocolate was chocolate.
And it's getting a little bit more hard to find, that those cocoa beans, now that they've been cutting down the forests everywhere.
Yes, and there's a some kind of fungus that's killing them. And,
well, there's a fungus among us.
Yeah. There is fungus among us.
Disease, disease.
Oh, Bill. So there's a fudge shop in called Trombley's in Hayward, Wisconsin. So if you ever, it's really good. And there's a real new one in Cook City, Montana. So that's the only two places I know to go to buy real fudge. Oh no, there's one on in Matlache, Florida, out towards Pine Island where I used to live. There's one. So that's three of them.
Yeah, there's one in Wyoming too.
There's one in Wyoming.
Yeah.
Well, that's four.
Foothills of the Bighorn Mountain.
Foothills of the Bighorn Mountain.
Yep. I guess it's still there. Gosh, I ain't been there for years. She may be gone by now, but she had a lot of fudge.
Do you prefer your fudge with pecans, walnuts, or plain?
Both, all three.
Do you like all three? Yeah.
Yeah. I ain't going to pass none of it up.
Well, if you had a choice between English walnuts and black walnuts, what would it be?
English walnuts and black walnuts.
In your fudge.
Gosh, I like them both. I don't know. A black walnut.
Black walnuts. Yeah. What about you, Rich?
I'd say the black walnuts would probably be better.
You like the black walnuts?
Yeah, okay. I like those. They're a little meatier.
They definitely have a bigger taste.
Yeah, they're a different taste altogether, yeah.
Yes, they don't taste anything like English walnuts, although they kind of look like walnuts, you know. And I'm a pecan guy. I really like those pecans in my fudge. Walnuts, yeah, I like those too. And I also like them plain.
I like nuts.
Yeah, I do too. What's your favorite nut?
Cashews.
Cashews, your favorite nut. Well, probably mine too. Although I like salted in the shell peanuts pretty much.
Well, I like them too.
How about those pistachios? Those are pretty good.
I like them too.
Yeah, I like pistachios.
It's a little different animal, but...
Until I read a story about how much water it takes for this wonderful company in California to grow pistachios. They take more water a day to grow their pistachios than the city of San Francisco uses in a week.
Really?
How about that?
That's amazing. Right.
That is amazing.
And they have all kinds of water diverted to grow these pistachios.
Well, it's the same thing with maybe almonds. Not quite as bad, but almonds, yes.
Yes, it's the same thing. And those are also from California.
Yes, they are.
And there's a lot of people looking for that water in California.
Yeah.
Lots of movies been made about that. Lots of stories, lots of corruption, murders, this, that, and the other thing over water rights in California.
Absolutely.
So, that kind of soured me on pistachios, although I still like them.
Yeah.
You know, I still like them, and I would buy them if they didn't have that wonderful company on the cover.
Yeah.
So they've sucked all the water out of the trout streams that used to be abundant in California.
Yeah.
But are no longer abundant. So there's a nut problem. Now, black walnuts, man, you can hardly find those if you don't pick them, pick them up off the ground yourself. Where would you go to buy a black walnut shelled and ready to eat?
I don't know anywhere, but we've got a bunch of them out here in this part of town.
Yes, I've got a bucket full of them that came from the neighbor's walnut tree. They just drop and roll down his yard and then roll across the street and into my yard.
Yeah.
So I have plenty of black walnuts. But boy, they're a mess. You know, You use the...
takes a lot of work to get them to the point where you can eat them.
When I used to live in the country, I used to put them out in the driveway, you know, let people drive over them. That automatically gets the outer husk off.
Right.
But if you got to do it yourself, boy, it's a mess.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's and you're gonna leave a lot of brown stain around somewhere.
Yep.
That stuff does not come off easily. When you get it on your hands, you're gonna have some brown hands.
Well, I think that's why they call it black walnut.
Yeah. Well,
you gotta use lemon juice.
Lemon juice.
Uh-huh.
Will WD-40 work?
I never tried that. Don't know.
So I'll try lemon juice the next time.
I remember going when we used to go to school, you know, in grade school, like you said, we'd put them out here in the road and let the cars haul them out, and then we'd pick them up and go to school with our hands all brown and black and everything else.
Yes, I can imagine you were little urchins.
But that was the way to do it.
Yeah, well, it saves you a lot of work if you let the cars run over them.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
And they're so hard that a car won't crack the nut.
No, they don't. Very seldom.
Yeah, very seldom. That's right. And, buddy, you better know how to crack that walnut. They are hard.
I don't know where Fresh Times got walnut hauled out and stuff or not.
I don't know either. They've got a bunch of jars of nuts in there.
Yeah, they have, and that's where I get my pecans.
Yeah.
Or my cashews.
Cashews, yeah. Well, you know who's got good cashews is that one of those big discount stores, the one that's up in Indianapolis, Costco.
Oh, okay.
Right. They have really good cashews. Fresh.
Are they worth driving all the way up there to get a cashew?
Well, they've got one in Greenwood now. So Greenwood's not quite as bad as the north side of Indianapolis.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know whether I'd drive up there for them or not.
I wouldn't, but I'll stick here in Bloomington.
Yeah, well, Fresh Times got pretty good ones, I think.
Yep.
Well, I think they're good as any.
Yeah, well.
Around, anyway.
The trick with cashews is getting them fresh when they're still soft, you know.
You got that right. That's the time to get them.
And it's hard to find those. It really is.
Hey, well, guys, with that, we're out of time.
Well, we've wasted another hour of the people's time.
We have.
No, we ain't. No.
I'm not sure it was a waste, but...
No.
Yeah.
It was no waste.
It wasn't?
We used up an hour of everybody's time.
We did do that. Yes, sir.
We didn't waste it.
Well, we used up our time, too.
Yeah, we've used ours time, too. So everybody have another good week and stay healthy, and we'll be back next week.
And hey, if you did like that time that we just used up, you can give us, go to wfhb.org, and it's a fun drive this year. It's been hard because we can't get out there and answer the phones or do anything. But hopefully we'll be back at some point. But if you can donate, go to WFHB.org and click that donate button, and you can send us off a little bit of love to keep us on the air. We appreciate that from WFHB, and so please do. And again, thanks for listening. This has been Inside Outdoors.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.